We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is a TGIF beautiful, crisp football Friday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports kicking off live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 2.5 hours, we give you the personal tour home from your work week from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And even with LSU, UL, Saints, prep playoff swirling, how could I not lead with this?
So 3rd and 29 with 14 seconds left. Rudolph will dump it off to the left side. Trey Edmonds the catch. Sprints out of bounds. And a fight at the 9-yard line. Flags are thrown. The Browns and the Steelers, and Garrett just threw a punch. And Pittsburgh retaliating. Marquise Pouncey was kicking in there, and flags are flying with 8 seconds left. The Steelers are running from the sideline to join in. And this one is going to end in ugly fashion.
My man didn't throw a punch. Myles Garrett threw a helmet at Mason Rudolph, and it's as bizarre as you will see in organized professional sports in this country. I want to make sure to give proper respect to the hooligans out there with soccer and, you know, rugby and everything else. I don't know that world. I don't want to pretend that I do. We've likely seen more grotesque before in this country. Albert Haynesworth stomping on some guy's face and neck area on a gridiron, Rudy Tomjanovich decked in a basket brawl by Kermit Washington way back when. But this, for me, had a Kyle Turley on steroids feel. And because of the intention to hurt and potentially beyond repair, that's why it feels like it was much more than just Turley, much more than maybe anything we've seen before in this sport. And make no bones about it, Mason Rudolph was definitely a punk. He definitely instigated this thing. But clearly, Miles G took it to a level where you just can't. And I've heard some factions today saying, once you're in the fight, you win the fight at all cost. Yeah, but probably not while I'm working for my employer. Probably not while I'm doing my job on national television. And by the way, doing something that would get anyone arrested on the streets. And oh, by the way, did it all in plain sight. I've heard a lot of that today as well. Could you imagine what would happen if you just did this out in public? Yes, you would be arrested. Yes, it would be assault. Yes, it would be very bad. But typically, even if you wanted to do some dirt like this in public, you wouldn't. You would try to have this secluded. Everyone saw this. And even if he was the one who reacted, well, what do we always hear? It's the one who is second that always gets flagged. And in this case, boy, it's more than just 15 yards. It's more than just a flag. And in my opinion, Myles Garrett right now, lucky that so far this is only league discipline. The latest that's come out within the last couple of hours, Garrett, star Browns defensive end, suspended indefinitely for a period at least through this season and postseason without pay. That means a minimum of 6 games he'll be out. Marquise Pouncey, center for the Steelers, suspended 3 games. The retaliatory punching and kicking at the bottom of the pileup, you heard it from Westwood One on the play-by-play blows a few moments ago. And then Browns D-tackle Larry Ogunjobi, probably butchered that, but he's suspended for a game. Mason Rudolph currently expected to be fined. The hammer hasn't dropped there yet. He called Myles Garrett's actions cowardly. And these two teams, for whatever it's worth to you, fined $250,000 apiece. So, CD, again, for me, Myles Garrett at this point lucky that this is only something that is being disciplined and sanctioned by the league, but I think there's a big part that's played here by Mason Rudolph, and he can't go completely overlooked.
They did the right thing, and they did it like really fast. I think that was the most surprising part. Just about 12 hours later, they handed down. I was surprised how quickly this came down.
I like Swift, but maybe more than that, I like that the action is open for them to, well, be more punitive, right? I like this from the NFL because it's at least six games. He deserved that. Browns aren't going to the playoffs at 4-6, but I think they've left the door open to where they can make this even harsher. They want to keep reviewing. They did act swiftly, to their credit, but they acted with a heavy hand, and I think that they were forced to. All right, let's take our first trip out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Chad, those are my opening thoughts on Myles Garrett doing really the unthinkable. What's your take?
Ben, what's crazy is, though, it's crazy it's coming from him. He's a poet. He plays the piano. He's to himself. He's the most, you know, he's the nicest guy on the field. And then he just flips the switch, I guess, when he gets on the field, man. It's just crazy. Maybe he's mad about Texas A&M being as horrible as they are. Thank you, Ben.
I'm sure it has everything to do with that. I've seen it online from LSU fans. They have it on good authority that this is still pent-up anger about Johnny Football not performing well against LSU. I'm sure it haunts Myles Garrett's very existence. And, look, Chad brings up the point that this guy off the field is very learned, very eclectic, and he is all of those things. But I'm not sure it's as simple as saying he flips a switch when he takes the field. That would be like saying that this came out of nowhere and he did it for no reason. No, he did it because he was provoked. And Myles Garrett went for his lid first. Listen to me. Mason Rudolph went for Myles Garrett's lid first. He's the one who started to instigate this because he didn't like the way he was taken down. And then afterward, you see Pouncey, who's just got a stellar reputation as a great lad, right? Even back to his days in Florida. Yeah, those blocking Pounceys are a little dirty, in my opinion. But he comes in, and he's going to take up for his guy. And so I think it's probably a well-earned three-game suspension for Marquise Pouncey. He was trying to prove a point. You don't touch my guy. You certainly don't remove his hat, and you're not going to throw it at him either. And you're not going to risk incredible bodily harm. And so for Marquise Pouncey, he has his quarterback's back. He's willing to go down three games without pay for it. That's one that's almost well-earned. There's nothing in this for Myles Garrett. There's no end game here where this goes well for you. And at this point, he certainly knows it. In fact, right after the game ended, Baker Mayfield even knew this is not going to end well, and our guy probably deserves whatever's coming his way.
I don't think there's anything in that moment that I can really say to calm him down. You know what? The reality is he's going to get suspended. We don't know how long, and that hurts our team. And we can't do that. We can't continue to hurt this team. It's inexcusable.
You know, we crush Baker Mayfield from time to time on this show. That's a grown man taking accountability response, at least there. They knew their guy was going to get suspended rest of the regular season slate. That's six games and maybe more for the preseason darlings in the NFL. Myles Garrett, an ugly look for the league, but they act swiftly. More importantly to me, they drop the hammer. And oh, by the way, it can drop harder and it can drop even further down. This thing can absolutely go into and through next season. And they still reserve the right to have Myles Garrett sit down with Goodell before he's allowed to suit back up. So, yeah, I wanted to put my focus on the Saints and the NFC in the open today. Wanted to start looking at LSU Ole Miss, Cajun South Al. All that got put on hold. Your lead story nationwide in sports had to be touched on here. And we have to get more of your response later in this hour. We'll do exactly that. But on the other side of this break, we got to send it to Baton Rouge. Ronnie Rance, we'll talk LSU football and some interesting tie-ins with this past weekend and how that could affect Nick Saban's entrance into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Ronnie Rance joins us within 4 minutes. Justin Vincent making his way here at straight up 5 o'clock. And then we'll go football night in Acadiana pregame style. Getting you ready for week one in the Louisiana High School Football Playoffs. That is from 6 to 6:30. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, we'll be right back with a Football Friday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And welcome right back in. Excited to welcome aboard our first guest of the afternoon. Let's go find him. Aboard the Arco Equipment Hotline, it's Ronnie Rance, host of Sports Shorts TV, Monday and Tuesday evenings. Make sure you watch it. Pelican Channel HD. It's 1013 in Lafayette. How are you, Ronnie?
I'm doing good, Ben. How are you, buddy?
Life is still pretty good. I think a lot of folks in this neck of the woods buzzing from that win over Alabama. I'll get your reaction, not just that they did it, but how they did it in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, no question. You know, it was a different atmosphere this time around, LSU at Alabama. You know, the fans for Alabama, I felt like, sensed that we could lose this one. And that was different than in years past. And what I saw was LSU fans kind of giving the business at times, you know, outside the stadium to the Alabama fans. And they were kind of taking it a little more than years past. And I think they knew this is going to be really tough. We could possibly lose this game. And I thought the outcome, obviously, LSU deserved to win. Both teams had issues. You know, Alabama had the first half with all the turnovers and penalties, and then LSU in the second half, defense had trouble stopping the Crimson Tide. But at the end of the day, I think the right team won. I know it wasn't a fluke. People that watched the game around the country saw the better team win.
When you think about Joe Burrow, his race toward the Heisman Trophy, what did this game mean in that context?
I always thought all along, Ben, that, like, you know, even when he started off and got off to the hot start and put his name in the conversation for Heisman, I thought it was all going to come down to the Alabama game. If LSU won the Alabama game, he'd win the Heisman. And I personally didn't really think it mattered too much what the stat line was. I mean, you know, as it turned out, the stat line was amazing. He threw almost 400 yards and a few touchdowns, and he ran the ball for, you know, grossed about 90-something yards on the ground, and of course they take away the sack yards, which is ridiculous in college football. But the bottom line was that I didn't think the stats mattered as much as just LSU beating Bama in Tuscaloosa and him being the leader of the team. And, you know, we know his numbers are going to be piled up by the end of the year. But I think the fact that he did play so well, it just stamped it. You know, it just really ended the debate. Barring a absolute catastrophic collapse by this LSU team down the stretch, he's going to be your Heisman winner.
How you feeling about this defense, Ronnie, compared to, say, after 4 or 5 weeks of the season?
Well, you know, it makes me nervous. I don't think this defense has played up, you know, to the standard that we thought they would be, for various reasons. I think, you know, you had some players quit, transfer that affected depth. You had injuries. You've had some players at times not play as well. I don't think Grant Delpit has played very well this year. You know, now, is that fair? Did we have too much expectation? Possibly. I mean, the guy was All-American last year. You know, it was fantastic. You expect him to play at that level or better, and he just hasn't. And the defensive line, that, you know, with injuries, is, you know, partly being a part of it, just hasn't been as dominant. Even Kalavon, as good as he played last week, and that was probably his best game of the year, doesn't have the sack numbers than any of us thought he would have. So defense has been a little bit disappointing for various reasons. The upside is they've been able to win even though they haven't played great. And that buys time. That gives this defense time to get healthy. This defense gives them time to play better. And keep in mind, when, you know, if they get through the season 12-0, you know, they'll have a few weeks before the playoffs. And, you know, Dave Aranda and them can kind of reevaluate, reassess, and probably come up with some new things for the postseason.
We're visiting with Ronnie Rance, also the executive director of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation. And what an interesting tie-in. You kind of prompted me here prior to our interview, but it's a good point. Nick Saban loses to LSU first time in 8 years. It's been well documented. And this summer, he's going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. How do you think he'll be received now?
I think everybody's going to be very accommodating now. You know, it was funny when the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, when we announced our class publicly in mid-September, you know, there were those that wanted to know, well, why is Nick Saban getting inducted? What's the process? You know, why now? Why not later or whatever? And so we went through, we kind of explained that. In the back of my mind, I always hoped, Ben, that LSU would beat Alabama this year because it would make next year's homecoming just a lot more nice. You know, I can imagine
at
people
least you're
going
honest.
Up to coach. Yeah. I think people going up to Coach Saban next year will be like, hey, Coach, great to see you. Glad you're here. Congratulations. We got you this year. You know, we won that national title or Oh, we got to, you know, New Orleans Bay. Good luck next year, but great to have you back, Coach. Thanks for everything you've done. You know, I think it'll be a much more heartwarming homecoming for Coach Saban as opposed to if they had kept their dominance and won 9 in a row and played for a title and we're on the outside looking in. People might have been a little bit more salty.
Are you a believer, Ronnie, in the possibility that these two could play again as, unfortunately, we all saw play out in 2011-2012?
I think it's absolutely a possibility. I don't know this will happen. I think the best bet, I mean, obviously if you're an LSU fan, you don't want LSU to lose to Georgia. I know there's many that believe if LSU were to be undefeated, lose to Georgia in the SEC championship game, that they both would get in. But assuming LSU wins, and that's what we want to happen, and you're looking at that last spot, I think the best case scenario is Oregon to win it, to beat an 11-1 Utah team. You'd have an 11-1 Oregon team that meet in the Pac-12 championship. You get an Oregon team who's 12-1 into the Pac-12 champion, had a lot of buildup going into the season. They've got a first-round pick quarterback. They lost to Auburn basically on the road, even though it's technically a neutral site in Atlanta. And, oh, by the way, their AD is the chairman of the board for the playoff committee. Now, he can't be in the room when they officially vote, but come on. I mean, he's hanging out with these guys all year. He's building relationships. He's making a case, you know, over coffee at the hotel or whatever. And, yeah, he steps out of the room. But are you really going to tell that guy when he comes back in, you're 12-1, you won a conference championship, oh, by the way, you didn't get in. We put in an 11-1 Alabama team who wasn't a champion at all in their league. I think that's your best bet for Alabama not to get in.
Look, Ronnie, we've made the joke, and I want to stress this is a joke. No gentleman's forfeit in that SEC title game. Georgia 2, LSU nothing, and we'll just take it on down the road to January. Can't do that, right?
No, you can't do that.
Concede the putt.
Both teams take a knee, you know, for the whole game. I wouldn't want to see that happen. And look, I mean, you know, I want to see LSU earn it. I mean, don't we want to see them earn it? You know, we want them to have to go 14-0. And look, we don't want to have to see them play Alabama. And I honestly think this is the year that they don't get in. I think there's some Alabama fatigue, just like there's probably some Oklahoma Heisman fatigue. And you've got a legitimate case, man. If Oregon goes 12-1, I think that they're going to get in. I think people will. There's enough conversation going on right now, lobbying for, hey, there's teams that are more well deserved.
I'm with you, and we can't do that to the folks in Atlanta. Otherwise, we rob Dr. Pepper, Golden Flake, and everybody that's been so good to all of us. Hey, Ronnie, before we let you go, what else is going on in your world?
Well, I'm on the road actually to Oxford, Mississippi. Going to be covering the big game tomorrow for CST, Cox Sports Television. We'll have the LSU live post game show from the locker room, and I'll check that out tomorrow night. Victor Holland Studio, myself, Jacob Hester, Gordy Rush, over outside the stadium. And then I was actually in Lafayette last night. Went to a few functions with my brother, Gus Rance, who's running for state rep. So unfortunately, I can't be there Saturday night with the family in Lafayette. You know, hopefully pulling them through to a victory. So going to be cheering from afar in Mississippi. But, you know, was working hard with them yesterday over in Lafayette and going to be missing out on the festivities. But hopefully I'll be able to give them a victory shout-out on CST after the game.
Just a good brother. Great guest as well. Ronnie, love having you here in the Hub City. We'll catch up soon. Safe travels.
Thank you, Ben.
Mr. Sports Shorts. He does it on radio and BR and TV throughout South Louisiana. Our thanks again to Ronnie Rance. Clint, I think I'm going to have to retire this because every time we even just jokingly make reference to giving anything less than a full effort, anything suggesting the, what is it here, the 1919 Black Sox? I think that was the year?
Yeah.
Right. So anytime that we, you know, basically start putting a finger on our nose like the Sting a little bit. Anytime we suggest that for that game in Atlanta in a few weeks,
yes,
somebody's panties get wadded. So I'll stop suggesting it even jovially, except for I won't over the next 3 weeks. But I've at least, you know, feigned interest that I'll keep some of these texts at bay.
That's amazing. I'm just loving the fact that everybody's not necessarily as huge of a fan of basically taking a dive.
Concede the putt. Like, you know what I mean?
Just like Bruce Willis in Pulp Fiction.
That's actually not a bad example. None of that, of course, is going to happen. What will go down tomorrow evening by the Grove, a football game. How close will it be? That's what we're going to debate. On the other side of this break, I've got a few questions I'll throw your way. You know how we get down. It's Friday. It's football season. We've got over-unders. I'm coming at you with two of them, one on the Ole Miss side, the other on LSU's side. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. And then we get into a little Saints-Bucks talk. That Saints injury report that came out today, pas bon. Clint, I've been told that's French for not good. I'll explain. After a brief timeout, I'll speak mostly English and just a little bit of French with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Tip of the cap to our man, Ronnie Rance. Always fun catching up with him. I let off the show before, Ronnie, in case you're just joining us, or if you were here and you need your memory jolted, on last night's brawl between AFC North rivals Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Chad called in. Anybody else that wants to get in on that subject, we've got time for you here. And frankly, for the next half hour at 706-0111, let me know where you come out. I don't see where there's a side for Myles Garrett here. I do see where possibly Mason Rudolph, I hate to even say it, in some ways, I think you'll know what I'm hinting at here. In some ways, he got what was coming to him for starting it, instigating it, and acting the punk. He did all of those things. But I don't know that anybody who steps onto the field of play deserves to have a helmet, whether it's theirs or anybody else's, slung at their naked head. Ooh, that could have been so, so much worse. So it's hard for me to see how anybody comes out on Myles Garrett's side. I'm just interested maybe how you slice up the blame pie. Again, the news from all this, Garrett suspended indefinitely for a period at least through this season and postseason and without pay. So a minimum of 6 games. Marquise Pouncey for the Steelers suspended 3 games. And then Larry Ogunjobi, I think I did better that time, Browns defensive tackle, suspended 1 game. Each of these teams docked $250K. More fines are coming. Expected at least one's going to be levied at Mason Rudolph and all this. So if you want to come in on that topic, we got time for you. Otherwise, how about some different questions, some over-unders? It's Friday. You know we have to do this.
Love, exciting and new.
2 over-unders for you today, both going in on the LSU-Ole Miss game in Oxford. Over-under number 1, Ole Miss scores 14.5 points. Do the Rebs go more than 2 scores in this ball game? Over-under Purdue, Joe Burrow passes for 355 yards. I picked that number because it is Burbank Joe's season average. We're going to keep it really simple today. It's just those two. The Rebels, over-under 14.5 points on the board. Burrow, over-under 355 through the air. So, Clint, you can't take 50 or 60 yards on the ground like last week and push that toward this balance. 355, and it has to be through the air. Lead us off. What say you?
For the first one, Ben, it feels like it's almost like stealing 14.5 points. Ben, I got to take the under on this one because I feel like you will see LSU's offense take care of business. And mind you, the Ole Miss offense is relatively one-dimensional, a lot more focused on the ground game. Once you can shut that down, I feel like it's going to be incredibly easy for LSU to hold Ole Miss down to 14 points. I think that's going to be where things go from here. And then with Joe Burrow, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, Ben. I'm going to stick with my tradition and go with over here. Joe Burrow is going to wind up getting things done over 355 yards passing. I would not be surprised, though, if Miles Brennan winds up coming out there in the fourth quarter.
For me, you not only stands for under this week, it's probably going to stand for unpopular. I'm going under Ole Miss 14.5 points. All right, that one actually may be popular with LSU Nation. But I think when you poll the majority of our people so far on Facebook, Clint, they are pounding the over on Ole Miss points. I've set the line at 14.5. I think it'll be under. I think that their offense has sputtered against some of the good teams on their schedule the last couple of weeks. Auburn held them to a fairly low number. Bama didn't, and I'll give credit to Ole Miss for that. But since then, they haven't had the same type of productivity on offense. I know they've switched quarterbacks. Still, there's a lot of inexperience there. And I think LSU's defense is just starting to flex some muscles. I've got Ole Miss under 14.5 points. And you know I'm doubling down under again with Burrow 355. He is more than capable of hitting that number, but you hit on a very important point, CD. There's no guarantee that he plays this whole game. He could get some of the Tua Tagovailoa treatment from last year. No fourth quarter, minimal fourth quarter. And so I don't know that he'll have the body of work, but this is also, for me, a vote of confidence in LSU's running game. And it's a shiny toy that's been discovered. It's not just 22. It certainly starts there. I have the feeling that this is a big game for Ty Davis Price, and then maybe a little coming down the stretch for the other freshman and John Emery Jr. So I think collectively LSU is going to put forth a really nice showing on the ground, might have a second-string QB get some run. I've got under in both cases. 14.5 points for Ole Miss. Don't think they're getting there. And I got Joe Burrow under that passing line of 355. All right, enough of us. Let's get some of your best takes. We're heading out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dusty is with us. Dusty, I'm told you want to go over-under and talk last night's brawl.
Yeah, man, last night's brawl was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. I don't know what Mason Rudolph was thinking trying to fight that big dude, but with all the things to do on a football field, you hit somebody in the head with a helmet, and the funniest part was with all the street points that he tried to get hitting him with that helmet, Mason Rudolph didn't even flinch. He hit him, never went down. Marquise Pouncey goes to start punching him. He goes down like a ton of bricks. It was one of the funniest and most ridiculous things I've ever seen. Oh, man. Ridiculous.
I'm with you. All right, Dusty, I appreciate the call. And never quite got to the over-unders. But I'm with him. I think it's as bizarre as an event that you'll see in organized sports in this country, organized professional sports. Amateur sports, I don't put it past anybody. But at the NFL, MLB, NBA level, I mean, it's absolutely uncanny. And again, there's no Myles Garrett side in all of this. There can't be. He was provoked. He reacted it too harshly, but I don't know. I'm just curious how everybody feels about maybe the instigator in this and how much should come down on quarterback Mason Rudolph. All right, CD, who do we have next?
Yeah, I want to get a dial tone there.
The old throat slash for a guest. That's what you're giving me on the other side. So why don't we do this? We'll take our final break in the hour. Then we'll come back, excuse me, and we'll keep the fun train going. After a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
No, I mean, listen, I don't know, week to week with Marshawn, I mean, in other words, he's working on getting healthy, but we feel like we've got pretty good depth at that position.
And that's Sean Payton updating Marshawn Lattimore's injury situation. We'll give you the full Saints injury intel. We'll take your calls on the subject. And CD, I guess I just get a little choked up, a little emotional when talking LSU over-unders. Hardly made it out of that last segment, but feeling good. We're back in, and we can put those back on the board for you as well. We've asked you, does Ole Miss score 14.5 points over-under? Joe Burrow, does he hit his season average of 355 through the air again? We'll keep the Ardco Equipment Hotline open for you, and we'll share some of the great response that we're getting on Facebook and Twitter. But back to those Saints, and back to what we heard there from Sean Payton. The injury report today reveals three usual suspects that won't be in the lineup and won't dress out. Marshawn Lattimore out at corner. That's the biggest deal. Add to that mix, Andres Pete officially out along the offensive line, and Deontay Harris out more as a return man than a receiver for this Saints special teams unit. So let's leave Harris and the return game alone. I think you could find somebody back there with sure hands to secure possession. In the past, we've seen it with Alvin Kamara. I think even Taysom Hill you could put in that spot. Ultimately, the Saints will find somebody there. Shouldn't have a huge tangible impact on this ball game. The other two, however, that's a big deal. And I'm actually going to start with Andres Pete. Without him, likely a much bigger spot now for former Brother Martin Crusader and LSU Tiger, Will Clapp. And that's a big deal because this Bucks defensive line loves to get physical up front. This is a team that's given up a decent amount through the air, but they have bottled up the run game with some consistency, and now you're going to go after that stout D-line without one of your regulars in Andres Pete. And so next man up could cost you there. I wonder, however, if it won't be more costly in the Saints secondary. No Marshawn Lattimore. Boy, that's a big, big, big next man up type of assignment that you have to chew off there when you're looking down the barrel at Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. What I will tell you about those two, Jameis Winston, this passing offense, is simply this. They remind me a decent amount of what Kirk Cousins has done with the Vikings for the majority of his tenure there. Kind of what Kirk, frankly, did while he was a Washington Redskin. Those guys put up numbers. Their teams may not always win a whole lot, but you could argue that's one of the top tandems in all of football. From a productivity standpoint, heck, they're probably one or two. Evans and Godwin, and now you go after them without Marshawn Lattimore. So we've got some more Saints sound, again, that will kick your way, but this is a very, very big deal that right now Sean Payton and the Saints announced they'll go without Marshawn Lattimore to Tampa this weekend. So we'll see exactly what the next man up mentality looks like there, how it maybe impacts this game. Because the other thing you have to consider, Tampa last week got back O.J. Howard. And so whereas it's been Cameron Brate at tight end, now they've upgraded and yet another pass catcher in the ranks for Tampa, a team that scored a lot on New Orleans, in New Orleans. Now the Saints are heading to the Big Sombrero, and it'll be Breeze at quarterback instead of Teddy Two Gloves. And let's flip it to that side. Put our attention there, Clint. What's the biggest thing for you that this Saints offense has to do differently, must, from the Falcons bust, to come out with a victory here and get back to winning ways?
I think the biggest thing for me is, you talk about it with offensive line, Andres Pete, now he's out. Will Clapp is going to be in there for all four quarters of that ballgame. I think the most important part is that offensive line needs to hold up for a good chunk of that game, because I noticed a lot that Drew Brees was under pressure a ton. I think that hurt the Saints' offense to try and get into that second gear and start utilizing Taysom Hill more and more like they have in the past, especially when you look at what they've done in the red zone. That's the biggest thing I feel like this Saints offense needs to do, is have that offensive line hold up and make sure you keep Drew Brees upright. It's a cliche thing, some I've mentioned a million and two times, but I feel like this week more than ever, without Andres Pete, it becomes even more important.
Do you think we saw a throttled back Alvin Kamara last week, his first return from injury against the Falcons? Did that feel throttled back to you?
A little bit, yes.
How much do you think that changes? Because for me, big storyline in this game. There's no question that Latavius Murray has proven himself capable of shouldering the load, but I think you almost, by definition, have to phase him out. The healthier that AK-41 is, he's got to be the focal point without being Atlas. You have to get him closer, I think, maybe to that 20 to 22 touch range a game, but there's no reason he has to creep on 30.
Exactly. You need to wind up trying to find the healthy balance. And basically, I would say almost try and figure out how you divvied up the pie last year when you had Mark Ingram after the four-game suspension.
So you're comfortable with Latavius having Ingram type of PT and touches.
Exactly. I'm comfortable with that.
I don't know if I want that much.
Because my thing is, I'd much rather have a guy like let's say Latavius Murray and Alvin Kamara be in a lot more of like a split-back formation. That way you can kind of tear him up and make sure you keep that defense honest to be like, hey, maybe they won't hand it off to Latavius Murray, hand it off to Kamara. You keep them honest. You want to have a little bit more of a wild card situation going on where you'd have Kamara and Murray out there. That way The defenses don't know which way you're going to roll with it.
I'm with you. I just don't know how much I want him to have Ingram type of playing time. But he's proven he can be responsible for a decent amount. And he can help defer some of the hits and the carries and the time for Alvin Kamara. So we'll see what that breakdown is like. I also could tell you this. It's my firm belief that the Saints will come in with a little bit of the proverbial chip, right? There's got to be a chip on the shoulder. You didn't just get beat at home by Atlanta. You got housed. And so I think that's a wake-up call for both of your lines. I think the Breeze, especially with this offense, is going to have that group dialed in. And that's why in a game like this, trying to, I guess, reestablish order, if I win the opening toss, I want the football, and you're going to see immediately what we're about today. We're different than it was a week ago, and this is how we put it behind us. So it would be a godsend if they could win the toss and get to establish some momentum. If the defense goes out first, I think it's strength on strength in this ball game because, like I said, they put up yards and they put up points. They don't always win with Tampa, but their offense is pretty potent, and your defense is going without one of your main guns in Marshawn Lattimore.
And I wouldn't mind kind of taking that ball early on in the ball game. You got to establish yourself because this is the most important month on your NFL calendar for the Saints because the entire month revolves around what? Divisional opponents. You're playing the Falcons last week. You played the Bucs this week.
And I believe before this month is over, you get San Fran, or is that into December?
That's next month.
Okay.
Because you're in the month with them, the Thanksgiving game against
that's
the
right.
Falcons. So,
that's
yeah,
right.
You avoid December 1st.
And so it's an all NFC South affair this month. And here's the other thing. As you look around the NFC, Saints at 7-2, two games clear of the Panthers, who they still have to play twice more. But I don't think you're going to see anybody else in the NFC South challenge for a potential opening round bye week. You've got two such contenders for that distinction in the NFC West. The 49ers finally humbled this year. They're at 8-1. Seahawks, they got that big win in OT. They're 8-2. Both of them are competing with the Saints for a first-round bye. And I think you've got two as well in the NFC North. The 8-2 pack, and to a slightly lesser extent, the 7-3 Minnesota Vikings. And so there you have it, Clint. I just gave you five teams that are fighting for two spots. And so for the Saints, sure, you want division dominance, but you also want to have a chance to get into December to host the 49ers, to your point, when the calendar flips to the last month of this calendar year, you want your chance to still be more like the two that are getting a bye than the three that are scrapping on wild card weekend.
Exactly. You need to wind up trying to establish yourself and wind up getting that bye week. Because we've seen what happened in the past whenever the Saints don't have that bye week, they don't necessarily they're not able to get over that hump and get to the NFC title game. We saw it a couple years ago against Minnesota. You need to lock down that bye week, in my mind.
And as far as the rest of the week, 11 action that's out there, if you're going to look across the NFC, all right, which games are important? Which ones are going to help us tell the tale of the landscape? I'll give you a few to keep your eye on as we come down the stretch of our hour number one. Bears at the Rams. Potential for an elimination game as far as legitimate playoff contention. The Bears are 4-5. Rams, last year's NFC title winners, are 5-4. You lose this one, you are in a world of hurt. And I also think the Philadelphia Eagles are teetering on the brink. And that's going to be a late Sunday afternoon game. Eagles are hosting the Patriots. Eagles at 5-4. If they lose at home, kind of like those other two teams I just told you about, they are in some trouble. Taking a stroll around the rest of the NFC. Vikings at home against the Broncos should take care of business. Cowboys on the road at Detroit. They've got a win to get to 6-4 and stay in contention for the playoffs. And then the Carolina Panthers had a good effort, just fell short at Green Bay last week. They're at home against the 2-7 Falcons early on Sunday. So a slice of your NFC life in week 11, Saints at the Bucs. It's about staying up there near the tip top and having a chance at least for an opening round bye. All right, let's cap off our hour, CD. And we always do that with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Competition. A lot of talk about LSU maybe paving a way to the college football playoff. Everybody wondering/worrying about Alabama, where they may fit in. But I think the biggest competition to get there, a couple teams that are going to take on each other on the plains this weekend. Georgia at Auburn, that's the one to watch. Georgia can stay on track to be an 11-1 team in that ball game, have an opportunity to beat LSU and get in, while the Tigers probably still do the same. And, of course, if Auburn defends its home turf, if Auburn runs its record to 9-0 coming out of byes under Gus Malzahn, suddenly they're not dead and buried yet. Not with a win over Georgia and a chance to beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl. So a lot of competition, not just against one another, but in terms of the college football playoff on the plains. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming back and bringing Justin Vincent with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Wasting no time, we are ready to roll into hour two of three. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, a Football Friday edition on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And quickly, let's keep our Friday traditions intact. Getting out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline, we bring on Justin Vincent with the Tiger Athletic Foundation. Justin, happy Friday. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well, but you and I would never bury a lead. So before we get to LSU-Bama and then LSU-Ole Miss, I've got to get your reaction to Myles Garrett swinging the helmet at Mason Rudolph and the NFL's subsequent action taken.
I think it's a little excessive. I think Myles, obviously you don't want to do something. I mean, he could have you know, hurt this kid. He was just laid up in the hospital like a month ago. But at the same time, I don't want to excuse what Mason did because he actually tried to rip his helmet off. So obviously what Myles did was unexcusable, but at the same time, he's making out like the victim in this situation, and he's definitely not.
And so glad to get your unbiased opinion. I know that you played for that Steelers organization, but you recognize fault from Rudolph. He has not yet been suspended. The rumor is he'll maybe just be fined. Do you think that would be enough for Rudolph?
I don't think so. You got to set the precedent, man, because right now he's, you know, the world and the football world, at least, just think that he's getting away with it. You know, they came down and dropped the gavel on Myles, but nothing was said about Mason. So they even found the guy who pushed Mason on the ground after the scuffle. So there's got to be something, you know, to come down the pipe. Hopefully, everybody gets equal, and I think this really excessive for Myles over the whole year. It's ridiculous.
And before we move on from this subject, JV, just one more. Are you surprised that things like this don't happen more often in a game with these types of emotions?
Yeah, you know, obviously, there's some of the stuff is it's a lot of pushing and shoving going on. I mean, the last time I think I ever saw somebody swing, I think it was when Andre Johnson and Corlin Finnegan got into it. But other than that, man, you really don't see those kind of situations where people are taking off helmets, throwing punches, swinging helmets, and all that stuff.
Crazy. It went down last night in an AFC North ball game. Justin, we'll move it along and talk LSU over Bama. What was the most satisfying part of that ball game for you? And don't just tell me the final score, but what that happened in the ball game meant more to you than anything else.
You know, they went out there with the confidence. They knew what they can accomplish, you know. So when you go out there and you know the game plan that you have has been effective, especially throughout the year, whether it's throwing the ball or running the ball when we need to, and then the score out the gate, you know, they don't realize what kind of confidence boost that gave LSU. I mean, obviously we've been scoring at will throughout the year, but against that team, the history, the 8 years of not, you know, not sniffing a win, you know, it's a satisfaction, man. And for me personally, it was the most peaceful thing because they were quiet as church mouses when walking out of the stadium.
I tried not to, I guess, spell this out chapter and verse, Justin, but yesterday I had Brandon Taylor on, and they showed that Julio Jones run, as you probably know, you were in the stadium. They showed that 2009 play on Brandon Taylor at least six times in the Jumbotron. It's amazing. Oh, yeah, I've never seen that at LSU before where they just go back to the same play over and again.
They did, and I mean, it's not like they didn't have a lot of plays throughout the year. They played us really well, and they got some spectacular plays. That was no joke right there. They literally showed that at least five or six times for sure.
That was crazy. Inside Bryant Denny Stadium. Our guest, Justin Vincent, on 103.7 The Game. I can think of you versus Georgia in Atlanta 2003, Jacob Hester against Florida in Baton Rouge 2007. Does this Clyde Edwards-Helaire performance rank up there with a single-game running back effort that's going to live for ages?
No doubt, because, you know, obviously Joe is Joe, but what he did on the ground against that team who's been vaunted for over the last decade or so and not allowing guys to really, you know, go off on them, you know, on the ground and receiving, you know, Clyde can, he can stick his fork in that pile with a handful of us that's done something like that in a significant game that meant so much. So, yeah, most definitely I think Clyde is that's his moment, and hopefully that he got some more to come.
You and I, again, can be fairly candid, Justin. I think it's been not necessarily swept under the rug, but it's almost taboo to bring up what happened in the offseason with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Considering what happened in that, in self-defense, this young man took a life, what do you think the journey from that point to now has been like that maybe none of us really know about?
Oh, man, I'm pretty sure that kid has dealt with a lot of emotional stuff, man. It's been a roller coaster for him, because regardless if you're in the right or you're in the wrong, someone is not here anymore. But, you know, he's raised right. He's a well-mannered young man. Every time he sees me, he always says, yes, sir. And I said, dude, I'm 36. Stop saying that to me. But he's always been a product of what his parents put out there, man. And you could, I mean, it's nothing but high praise for him at all times.
Justin, how do you keep your emotions in check and your focus sharp when you go to take on Ole Miss? It has nothing to do with their record, but just knowing nothing can be exactly what that atmosphere and those stakes were last week.
I don't know, man. I mean, for me personally, I don't like them. I'm not going. It's just my personal history with those folks and the fans and the whole nine. I just, there's something about that place. I mean, I think right now for these guys, they smell blood in the water. They got over the hump. They know now it's real. So go out Saturday, bust them in the mouth from start to finish, and on to the next one. You know, it's basically the destiny's in their hands, man. I think they know that. So I think they're going to go out there and they're going to score quick, early, and a lot.
Justin, knowing that your coach was the former coach there, it didn't go well for him. He doesn't have a lot of love left, I think, in Oxford for Ogeron. Is that a media fabricated thing, or do the players in the LSU locker room actually rally around that?
You know, I think that might be something that he doesn't even think about, man. Obviously, it's a place who gave you your shot, gave you a job. You wasn't able to do the things that they wanted you to do and the things that you wanted to do as a coach. But at the same time, you know, I don't think they hold anything to that at all. So it's another game for him. I mean, obviously there'll be people in there they can't talk crazy, at least they shouldn't, because the man has moved on to bigger and better things than Oxford, Mississippi.
All right, one final item, Justin, that we can discuss in the media, but I promise they're not in that LSU football bubble. Is there a scenario in which you would consider Alabama as worthy of getting into the Final Four after what happened Saturday?
No. Especially if all those other teams went out, no. You know, they found a way to screw the pooch in 2011. They do that again, then unequivocally in my mind, it's biased for them. Like, there's no shadow of a doubt for me anymore. Because if those other folks went out and they look at the records of those folks against Alabama's, which their only test was us, and they lost, they still got Auburn, and we'll see what they do. But at the same time, you know, even if they went out, I don't think they should get a shot, man. I'm not into that stuff anymore.
Always
appreciate it. They haven't played anybody.
Always grateful for the honesty there. All right, tell me about your Bar Bucks. Again, I told you I had Brandon Taylor yesterday. He said, of course, Franklinton's going to make a run. All right, well, your group is seated around that same number. Can the Bucks turn it on in the playoffs?
Yeah, you know what? I think they'll have a shot, man. I think Barber's been in the playoffs every year since, like 88, man. I think they have a shot just because history kind of falls on their side. But, you know, they're young, man. You know, there's a lot of unfamiliar faces out there on both sides of the ball. But you never know, man. I think, you know, Coach Cottrell will get them riled up and get them prepared to go. And I think they'll give it a shot, man.
We talked football on all three levels. Always a good time. Justin, enjoy your weekend. I'm glad you're not going to Oxford. Don't have to deal with that stuff.
No doubt, man. I appreciate it.
Justin Vincent, development officer with the Tiger Athletic Foundation. And Clint, as we head into a break, I got to be careful here. I've been scolded in the past before with this. I know that we have a number of our youngsters and our youth that are riding around in vehicles right now. And, of course, everything that you believe in terms of Christmas and Easter, all those things are true. I just want to say this. We got to find a way to keep JV's belief in the college football playoff system, right? Yeah, Santa, Easter Bunny, they're all real. They always have been. I'm not trying to tell your kids anything that you don't want them to know. But I want Justin to believe that the college football playoffs are real and that they exist. It sounds like if Bama gets in this year, he is ready to just throw them away. And then early January is no longer a holiday that he believes in. And that would bring me like a single tear.
He just wanted to be like, I mean, 10 years down the road after Alabama's been in there after a two-loss season, he just wanted him to be sitting here, it's still real to me, damn it!
That's not bad. That's not a bad comparison. So I still want this to be real to him, and hopefully I conveyed that one properly. Once upon a time, Clint, I went about that type of analogy in a little more direct and blunt manner, and I got a text immediately from somebody that every listener on this program would know. He is a really big sports name in this market, and he said that he was riding around with the young one in the car. And so he's, wait, Dad, what does Mr. Ben mean about? So, you know, just go ahead and keep Santa and the Easter Bunny out your mouth, Ben. And so I'm doing my best, and everything's real, and everyone's good. Right? Capiche. All right, we're going to hit our first break of the hour. Then we'll come back in. I want to talk a little Cajuns and this weekend in college football. We'll take your calls as well. 706-0111. And after a brief timeout, you can always believe in us. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
How about that Cajun defense?
Yeah! Hey, that's like 9 days old, 8 days old at this point, but it still rocks. How about that Cajun's defense? And they were that good a week ago yesterday, taking on Coastal Carolina. They stay on the road. They're taking on South Al and 28-point favorites. That's how lopsided this one could be, as Napier, who you just heard there, in year two, leading the Cajuns, looking to get off to a 8-2 start to the season. That would be absolutely incredible. The opportunity at 10-2. And, Clint, all of this success, it's got the Cajuns getting some pub from the outside. We've alluded to this. Haven't let you hear from Billy Napier on this subject during the show this week. But here he is discussing receiving a vote in the coaches' poll this week.
It's an external factor that can't be part of how we think or operate, if that makes sense. But there's no question that everyone, you know, gets excited, and that creates positive energy for the program, for the university, for the athletic department. But in reality, all that matters is that you continue to play well, continue to improve, find ways to win games. You know, it's college football. It's November. You see unique things happen each and every week. So we've got to be prepared to play. And one of the reasons we've had success playing well and improving is that we've prepared the right way. So, you know, what happens in the end will be a product of the work that we do between now and then. So we're going to work. We're going to focus on the work and not necessarily the result.
And that work would be the routine. We'll get to what Napier thinks of that routine here in a hot second. The reality, Clint, as I see it, if you get to 8-2, this program has been in this type of spot recently under Mark Hudspeth, so it's not completely uncharted territory. However, having said that, you have an opportunity to come home, and if you win one game there, you could get to 10 wins in the Sun Belt Conference title game, 11 wins potentially with the bowl win. Those are levels that you didn't climb to under HUD, so the things they have a chance to do, again, it's climbing the ladder. And what stands out to me is this year's team is just so well-rounded, with Levi Lewis joining the party in terms of his productivity in that Coastal game, added to the ground game, added to the defense, where coordinator Ron Roberts is a Broyles Award finalist nationwide. this group, to me, just feels more well-rounded than many of those HUD teams that won a bowl game and won a total of 9 on the season.
And I have to agree with you wholeheartedly there, Ben. This team is just so well-rounded, and something I've never really seen before. Sure, we've seen from time to time that defense has been able to break out in big performances, big games, but we've seen it game in and game out through the entire season. This team has absolutely looked fantastic on all fronts. I think outside of that App State game, everything's been working well in all three phases.
And for me, going to Mobile tomorrow, I'm more interested to see the defense than the offense. I want to see that trend continue. If they can continue to put teams in Nolan Ryan, you know, Robin Ventura-style little noogie headlocks, especially in their place, that would be incredible. You realize that too, right? Tomorrow is to go for a sweep of the regular season on the road.
Exactly.
Undefeated on the road. And your losses are neutral site, Mississippi State out of the SEC, mm-hmm. and home versus now twice overranked App State. And so for me, the defense in this one can continue to show me single-digit type numbers, even just sub-17 numbers for the opposing team. And then there's no doubt about what the offense can do. And like Napier said, it's because of the work that's put in. It's because of the routine. These guys have really bought into Napier and the staff's routine.
Yeah, I think these guys have really bought into the routine, if that makes sense. I think that they understand the value of preparation, how that can it can separate them from the opponent, the detail, the routine of whatever their position requires of them, you know, from a film study, going out and committing to making improvement fundamentally. And then, you know, I think we've just done a really good job of having a good plan, focusing on the things that are going to affect the game, being really technical in our approach. We got lots of players that have continued to improve, you know, so we have executed and played well on the road. I think you're right, and I think a lot of it just has to do with the maturity of our team and being in the second year.
Clint, winning breeds winning, but you got to keep doing the stuff that got you there, right? Do what brung you. If this man gives another soundbite without saying relative to, you might as well just take off the Van Halen t-shirt because the whole band's going to break up. You got to do it, coach. That's what we've had all season, right? 2 straight years of relative to.
Yes.
We need that. Let's see if we get it in this next clip, because I'll tell you, otherwise, this next clip is going to feel a little eerie for Saints fans. Napier says, when you're watching South Al on tape, you're not watching the 1-7 record. Oh, that feels a lot like the Falcons.
You know, reality is when you turn on the tape and you watch South Alabama, you don't see that record. I mean, you see explosive skill players, certainly one of the best runners in the league, big, tall, long, athletic outside, can create some matchup issues for you if you dedicate enough people to the run. And then defensively, I mean, some of the better, more explosive front players in our conference. Difficult to block, create issues for you. You can see that. You see it in every game that they played. And certainly they're long and athletic in the back end, too, can cover you. So this is not your typical. I don't think the record reflects what we're walking into here. Certainly on the road at their place where they've had some success. It's about us having a great week of prep, and we got matchup issues, and we're going to have a really good plan. We got to go out and execute the plan.
My gut tells me the Cajuns finish the regular season undefeated on the road, and that they take this one handily tomorrow at the home of the Jaguars. Do they, Ruff and Roderick style, cover the spread? Cajuns have done that all but one game this year. I think they certainly have that opportunity. CD, you look like you've got a devilish spreadheads type of grin over there.
They damn well better, because as we know,
man,
Ben,
you don't break into a cold sweat on me over here.
As we know all too well, Ben, good teams win, but great teams cover.
Are you saying this under threat of being kneecapped?
No.
You're sweating far too much on the other side of the 237 Roof Studios glass. Hey, I've got a little intel into the program. We just pride ourselves on being varied here. This is up-to-the-minute information on an area volleyball showdown. That's right. Before we can get to the state championships for our beloved football programs, volleyball's in it to win it right now. And boots on the ground telling me that Terlings Volleyball just defeated STM Volleyball 3-love in the state semifinals. And that means that tomorrow at 4:30, Terlings will go for its seventh straight volleyball state championship. They'll take on the winner of Ben Franklin and Assumption that I believe will be played later today. So, Clint, there you have it. I'm just a man of the people, of all sports, men, women, boys, and girls. If it's happening, we know about it. We tell you.
What a time to be alive.
You are Ed McMahon, and nothing short of that. So yeah. I look forward to your second act bringing oversized checks to people's houses in about 15 years. So
yeah.
Prepare yourself for that, and I'll look forward to it. I don't know what that makes me or where I'll be in 15 years, but that's your future. I've seen it in the cards. I know this. We've got more coming up on our program. We're going to throw shade, and not like predicting Clint's future type of shade. We've got something I think really, really good that you'll enjoy. I don't want to spoil it. You'll know it when you hear it, though. And then we're going to have the best from Gordy Rush, LSU side of the ledger, in this game against Ole Miss. What did Gordy think about the sublime fake QB draw pass that Joe Burrow pulled off to Ja'Marr Chase? Yeah, we'll get his look back at that. Then we'll look forward to Ole Miss with Gordy at the end of this hour. And then Ray steps in. That's RP3 to you. We'll have football night in Acadiana pregame edition as we're getting ready for the playoffs in all of high school football, unless you have a bye, which, of course, STM does. But still, we got you covered for everyone else. And, oh, by the way, how about this for a professional tease, Clint? I'm giving my most underseeded team in the entire state playoffs. That's coming at you 6 to 6:30. But on the other side of this timeout, we throw shade. More Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
You gotta love that. What a great reminder. As we bounce back in, you just heard during the break, we've got the holiday season rapidly approaching. Clint, I am thankful every day. As we come barking up upon Thanksgiving, I'm thankful that shade season is year-round. It's perpetual. It's eternal. I throw shade when it's cold. I throw shade when it's hot. I go and meet new people around town. They ask me if I'm throwing shade. Our good friend Mark Cuspeth, former head coach of the Raging Cajuns, asked me on air maybe to stop throwing so much shade. So it just never stops. And so I don't know if we need to form an app for it, but if we needed to, we might be the guys to start that shade app.
Exactly. We'd have to wind up creating like an AI bot, I guess, to be able to get this shade to be fully optimal and operational.
So basically you call up and something like just slams you? Would that be... That's like sounds like the worst app I've ever heard of.
No, but it's like, oh, hey, you know, what's worth throwing shade at today? And then it just spits out like the best and the brightest.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Start your day off with a little shade.
we might be the billionaires
what
before long.
What is this awful Walton & Johnson croup cough that you developed over there? You got to keep working
yes,
on that.
I've been trying to.
And that's just pre-shade. Let me get back into the real thing. Let's get back into our sports thing because these worlds, I promise, they're about to collide. But not until I remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com, and get familiar. Spend a little time checking out the standing seam metal awnings. They've got the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. There's so much there, but really it's the creativity that's going to amaze you. You'll sit down with Mark and Company, and they're going to help you create a vision and then fulfill it. Before the next time, it's warm every single day, and you need the patio not just for some of that shade. You want to put something else under there to where you're cooking, having a great time. You can picture it, right? It becomes a reality when you go to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
CD, it's hard to imagine how a Twitter beef can arise between former teammates. And I think it's all in good fun. In fact, I'm like 85-15 thinking that this is just good-natured ribbing. But Leonard Fournette and Jamal Adams took aim earlier today on the Twitter machine. It's the Ides of November, and cats are popping off. Current Jags running back Leonard Fournette. He came with the following, Clint, and this is just funny. Jamal ain't tell y'all our sophomore year in college that they had a fight at Lance's party, and he was under the table hiding where that chip on your shoulder was then. And then a whole bunch of laughing emoji faces. So all of a sudden, we know that there's something that was an inside joke that Leonard is letting out. And so Big Lenny wants the world to know that Jamal had some feline stripes that night, or at least he's alleging that.
That is just fantastic, what's going on with those two.
But you know it's not where it ends. And so Jamal Adams, who's kind of self-appointed the president, he's given himself that nickname, and he's playing good football as a safety with the New York Football Jets. There have been some rumblings about trading him, so I don't know how well-received he always is in that locker room, but dude's a good player, and he doesn't take kindly to Leonard's offerings on Twitter. So here's how he responded, Clint. Makes sense, dot, dot, dot. Coming from the cat that quit on us and faked an injury, then the little frog emoji, and then the cup of coffee emoji. Again, I think 85-15 that this is just in good jest, but even that 15 had a little bit of malice behind it there from Jamal Adams. Coming from the cat that quit on us and faked an injury from off the top rope, Jamal Adams.
Just tremendous amount of shade right there from our guy, Jamal Adams, just crushing him.
Yeah, and again, people just telling him, chill, man. Damn, boy, chill a little bit. We're getting some of that on Twitter, and that's not too dissimilar from what I gave Hunt earlier this week. Hunt, don't tell the sheeple what we said behind closed doors about forfeiting the SEC title game to eliminate Bama and have LSU and Georgia advance. You'd have to come on the show and say that, dude. These are behind closed doors agendas, my friend. And yet we kid. And yet Jamal and Leonard kid. Comma, sorta.
We're done throwing shade on bumper-to-bumper sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
A little tiger on tiger crime, and I guess there's nothing wrong with that. These guys feeling their way to and through the NFL. Both of those cats, top 8 overall draft picks in their respective year when they came out together. So, unbelievable. And I guess to the victors go the shade, maybe, we can start saying. Because, Clint, these were guys, I was reminded of something the other day. How often, I promise I'm going to connect dots, how often do you go through old pictures and videos in your phone just kind of for no particular reason, just, hey, you're bored and you want to go check it out?
Probably once every couple months.
Similar here. Except I went back and was able to find something that I hadn't seen in years. I did interviews. It was one-on-one with Jamal Adams, but it was I started the interview and then a whole throng of reporters, as Les Miles once said, a whole throng of media types flocked around me, so it became a group effort with Leonard Fournette. Both of them at the home of the Tampa Bay Rays for that Under Armour All-American game, and it must have been 2014. Shea Dixon and I were out there covering it, and so I uncovered those videos, and it's me interviewing Jamal Adams coming out of high school. He had just done some awesome breakdancing on the floor of Tropicana Field, and then I came up to him and interviewed him. So he was kind of breathless. It was funny to go back and watch, but Jamal and Leonard would be examples of kids that came in as top 10 prospects in America, 3 years later left as top 10 NFL draft picks, so I guess they've earned the right to have a little fun with one another.
It's just awesome. We got to see them going back and forth, having a little fun with each other. I wish we had that a lot more often rather than some of the stuff we've talked about earlier in the program.
I get that. I know. And you know it's inevitable that it had to come back around to that. Something else we got coming your way. Excited about this. It's not a Q&A replay. It's just the best of Gordy Rush. Think about a guy that puts out a bunch of albums or a band, and then you have a sampling, the best of. This is the best of CD, but it will get you ready for LSU Ole Miss, and then in, I'd say, about 18 to 20 minutes, RP3 steps in, and we go football night in Acadiana pregame style, and that one's going to be Chop Chop, no huddle edition of the program as we preview this weekend in the high school football playoffs. So stick with us. We got all that coming right back at you. And after this brief timeout, you'll have more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
We're getting oh so close to the playoffs, high school football playoffs. I don't care if it's LHSAA, LSA. Let's just get it on. I mean, win or go home time for everybody's favorite team. It starts tonight within the next hour and a half, unless you've got that bye. STM, you would be one of those teams that gets a week off to scout out. LCA, Notre Dame, a lot of other elite teams in the area doing the same. We'll preview it all for you on the other side of our 6 o'clock break. But right about now, it's still LSU Ole Miss, and it's still reminiscing on LSU over Bama. We can do that, but I think it's a common theme that you're going to see throughout this weekend in Oxford. The team can't. So everybody inside that bubble, they've got to go out, maintain the same level of focus, intensity, and maybe get a little bit of vengeance for Coach O back on his old stomping grounds in Oxford. But don't take my word for it. Earlier this week on the program, we spoke with Gordy Rush on the subject, LSU football sideline reporter. Again, we can look back, we can move forward. Here, we'll do a little bit of both for you. Gordy says there's no doubt about it that after Saturday in T-Town, LSU took an extra day as a team to really come down off of cloud nine.
You know, Ed O'Drone last night on this show was pretty transparent, said it was kind of a sluggish Monday. It took an extra day probably to get focused, but was really excited about the practice on Wednesday. And I think the good thing about this game is that, one, they said they got a boost, obviously, the excitement from the college football rankings. They came out number one. But number two, that you really have to pay attention defensively because this is a different offense. This is one of those weeks in which you've got to cram some different defensive responsibilities into just a few days because Ole Miss is very similar in some respects to what Georgia Southern's trying to do with a run-first quarterback.
Interesting perspective, kind of bridging the gap, if you will, between the Bama game and what comes next against Ole Miss. A full preview of the Rebs coming up from G-Man momentarily, but he went back to that Bama game, and as he circled back, he answered one of my questions. What did this one mean? Not just to guys like him that are entrenched in the program every day, but maybe even some of the ex-LSU football players that have been, I guess, frothing at the mouth for the better part of 8 years. Here's what Gordy said.
Obviously you get the monkey off the back. I think for, personally, and why we saw that was some of the emotion out of Coach Ogeron and the staff is everybody's tired of hearing about it. You know, you mentioned it. I go to get a Red Bull, and people are asking me when you're going to beat Alabama. But, I think the leadership is so solid on this football team that, like they've said, they've got higher goals. And beating Alabama was not the goal of this season, right? Obviously winning a national championship. So they've been able to keep it in perspective thus far, and I think how they come out and how they show in 40-degree weather in Oxford, Mississippi against a 4-6 Ole Miss game, I think will be the next chapter in this saga. Are they able to respond and play with enough emotion and be mentally sharp against a stingy and improving Ole Miss team?
Again, tie in what happened to what is coming next. I've got to look back once more. Because for me, and I told this to Gordy when we had him aboard, the fake quarterback draw late in the Bama game where Burrow approached the line of scrimmage and then put one over the top to Ja'Marr Chase is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in terms of football play scripting, play calling, and execution. I asked Gordy to go in on just what went into that play because I'm telling you, I don't think that any quarterback comes in, operates, and functions that.
Well, it's the same play they ran four times and they had success three times. What they do is Edwards-Helaire's in the backfield. They motion him out to a wide receiver position. And when they do that, usually Alabama's has a linebacker, somebody's going with him, which opens up the number game. You're able to get a hat on a hat and Burrow becomes the plus one. And so the only person that can fill is a free safety who's 10 yards deep. And you run it three times and what happens is the safety comes up and decides to try to make the tackle 2 yards in and overcommits, and what happens there, it's part of it. Burrow's taught to look at that safety, and if the safety's deep enough, you run it. If the safety keeps creeping up, fake run and hit that post, and it was all set up by the prior three runs.
And I asked Gordy, following that one, are we sure LSU's not playing chess when a lot of other folk are going checkers? He said, no, it's actually pretty basic. Yeah, you need the right quarterback to pull the strings, but still, LSU right now, they're catching up to what others around the country have done, but they're not overcomplicating the system. He said, yeah, they're just playing checkers, perhaps, at a very high level. All right, enough of what happened. All of that's been positive. LSU 9-0, the number one team in the country, and there's an opportunity to get to 10-0. You got to beat the Rebs in their backyard to do that. Here's Gordy's outlook on this Ole Miss team and maybe where they are now compared to where we thought they would be on the tail end of a lot of restrictions and probation for that program.
I think that, you know, offensively they lost a lot of skilled people, and they've done, you know, they've done a 180 from Tamu and all those great wide receivers that went to the NFL. They go to, you know, I think they were going to get a hybrid of that with Matt Corral, who was the highly rated quarterback from California, who got off to an okay start, but you know, they got behind and lost some clutch games. They lost to Cal. They lost a 15-10 game up at Memphis to start the season. The offense sputtered. You know, it wasn't until he got hurt and they went to Alabama and put John Rhys Plumlee in. And here's a guy, 6 foot, 175-pound quarterback from Hattiesburg that is a spread-to-run-you guy. He's very quick with the football. I mean, think like a Johnny Manziel type without the passing ability. And they surrounded him with three other running backs and wide receivers to boot, and all of them a little undersized, but all of them very quick. And, you know, they rushed for 289 yards at Alabama, albeit they lost 59-31 in that football game. But they've been better on offense, and you're like, wow, with all these freshmen, I kind of see a direction with that. And I think that Mike McIntyre is the defensive coordinator, former head coach of Colorado, has gone from a 4-3 to a 3-4. They've been better against the run. They're dead last in the conference in pass, but they've been better against the run, and they've played respectable, you know, against A&M and Auburn, two of their last SEC games.
Gordy Rush, he joins us on Thursdays. I wanted to get the best of that interview to you on a Friday, and that's the last time that we'll spend dedicated to LSU Ole Miss, a game with a 3-touchdown spread. Briefly, we'll get to the rest of the SEC and college football as we end this second hour. The game of the weekend, especially in this conference, number 4, Georgia, number 12, Auburn. It's on the Plains. Dogs, 3-point favorites. Auburn 8-0 all time under Gus Malzahn coming out of a bye. So I think that one's going to be interesting. And don't rule out, for your observation, your viewing pleasure, number 11, Florida at Missouri. If Florida at 8-2 wants to maintain its, I guess, path toward a New Year's Six Bowl, they got to win. But there's an outside chance, I suppose, that Georgia could drop 2 and Florida still finds itself in Atlanta. Again, it's remote. It would be a little bit like Bama or Auburn finding their way in at this point to Atlanta. But to keep those hopes alive, Florida's got to win in a Mizzou program that at least knows how to score points. Those are the real games of interest for me around the conference. Kentucky's at Vandy. Wildcats, 10-point favorites on the road. A&M at home over South Kakalaka. You can almost predict that. Aggies are 11-point favorites. Meanwhile, Ray Tanner over at South Kakalaka is having to guarantee his employees' future. That's right. South Carolina AD is having to weigh in on whether or not Gus, or listen to me, Will Muschamp, will be retained. So the only other game from around the SEC, number 5, Bama, is at Mississippi State. So, Clint, I think we've got a lot to look forward to this weekend. Georgia, Auburn, going to be kind of the swing game. Anything else cross your mind as we come up on our final moments in the hour?
You know, I don't have anything really to kind of go down on. I think you've hit everything that I really want to get to heading into this college football weekend. It's a relatively blasé slate after last weekend's phenomenal slate of ball games.
Yeah, we'll be watching one that's got East-West tie over, obviously, in the SEC. For our late arriving crowd on this Friday, Saints injury news, a final injury report before the Saints game at the Bucks on Sunday. No Marshawn Lattimore, no Andres Pete, no Deontay Harris. So you'll have a new punt returner. You're not going to have CB1 going up against, let's see, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, yikes. And you're going to have to go down the line obviously, with Andres Pete out on the O-line. So a big opportunity for former Tiger Will Clapp. All right, enough of the college and pro game. We got to shut it down now and then open up shop with Football Night in Acadiana pregame style. We're getting you ready for the playoffs, so don't go anywhere. You've been dialed in to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.